We're back to the Neil Haley Show on the Caregiver Dave Celebrity Segment. I'm excited to welcome to the program my co-host, Caregiver Dave. Dave, how are you? I can't believe, I think it's almost vacation time, but not for me. I keep plugging away. I got an amazing celebrity today on my show. Tomorrow, another interesting interview with NBC. A lot of fun things, you know, cranking at the end of the year, but reminiscing about the end of the year, Dave, right? Wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. You're hot. I mean, other people are shutting down and you're just going into high gear. Me too.
Absolutely. And we have a great guest. Go ahead and tell who our guest is.
Well, we've got a great guest today. Patrick Kilpatrick, action film villain. Appearances embrace a who's who of directors, writers, leading men, women of the last quarter century, like Bruce Willis and so on. I'm just going to let him introduce himself because he is just too amazing for me to even say. Patrick, welcome to the show.
Well, nice to thank you for having me. I joke around and say I've been killed or jailed or beaten up by every leading man on the planet in outer space. But spent 10 years as a journalist for magazines in New York and a playwright and assistant director and so have a two-volume book that's come out called Dying for Living, Sins and Confessions of a Hollywood Villain and Libertine Patriot.
That's a great title, by the way.
Awesome. Thank you. We cover a lot of ground, everything from inorganic brain damage of leading men to politics in Hollywood to a lot of really behind-the-scenes intel. Fortunate enough to have worked with Sean Connery and Arnold and, as you said, Bruce Willis and Steven Seagal and Jean-Claude Van Damme and Chow Yun-Fat. And it's been a wild ride.
And you look like all of them, all rolled up into one. I mean, you're a good-looking guy. You clean up good, and you look really mean, too. All the qualities of a villain.
You know, it's funny, as you go in your career, you get compared to different people. I seem to be getting Randy Couture a lot these days, you know, the UFC guy.
Oh, wow. Okay.
That changes.
It's funny, Patrick, when you talk about, you know, looking better when you're older. We weren't told that, Patrick and Dave, right? When we were young, that our days are ahead of us. The older we look, the better looking we get.
And if Sean Connery can do it, man, there's hope for all of us.
Well, you know, so what do they say? That when a person is young, they get the face that they have. When they get older, they get the face they deserve. So, you know, I think that's another very good point about, I had a car accident when I was younger and I learned a lot about rehabilitative exercise, massage, and chiropractic, and that all allowed me to resurrect myself after fighting 14 hours a day with some of these action guys. And it was actually, the car accident was a blessing. I also became a writer, which was a great blessing as an actor.
So you're almost like a stuntman. This is dangerous work, huh?
Well, it's not a stuntman. I think I only was paid once extra for doing the stunts. But you're always trying to get the most concise and uncut shot. So, and I'd always been athletic. And so if you're blasting through windows with two guns blazing and knee pads, you want to do those things at least once. I mean, the only time it got a little old was there was about 15 years there where I fought in every, and that kind of gets a little old. I had a wonderful stunt double named Dave Rowden, who did some very, very dangerous stuff, like the ratchet job. I don't know if you know what a ratchet is, but it's where they strap you into this harness and they blow you out the door when you get shot. But he did that for Last Man Standing, and it was a kind of a complete screw up because he went right over the pit that they had drawn for him. But with Tom Cruise, I did my own stunts, and Tom's amazing. He does his own stuff left, right, and center. It becomes a thing.
Right, well, like you said, a lot of traumatic brain injury going on there, unintentional, of course.
Well, most of that is from self-indulgence and lack of discipline for some of these guys. I talk about that in the book. That's not Tom. Tom's about as disciplined as you can come. So is Arnold. And, you know, they're all very, very interesting guys in their own way. But the crazies make it interesting. And there's some crazy.
Would you consider Bruce Willis as a crazy?
I got along with Bruce really, really well. I want you to know I'm very candid about what's going on with people in the book. But Bruce's origins are New York stage, which is where mine is. And so I really appreciated that after doing all the sports guys like Chuck Norris and who, by the way, is a nice guy, too. But the Jean-Claude's and the Steven Seagal's and to some extent the Arnold's. Mm-hmm. Those guys come out of sports rather than acting, and that was always my bent. If you were to put thought bubbles over us, Jean-Claude would be going, "What would Arnold do?" And I'd be going, "Well, what would De Niro do?" You know, that's the difference.
See, Patrick, sure. I love your gimmick, meaning the way you've lived a lot of your career in roles, because everyone loves being the bad guy. I was a former pro wrestler, and I love playing a heel better than the babyface. Even though pro wrestling's changed where there's no real good and bad, when I wrestled, it was the greatest thing to have people hate you. How good did it feel, especially when you're watching some clips of you beating up some of these leading men at times or torturing them, that how much people hated you because of what you did?
Well, you know, mostly people take great delight in it. I've spent a lot of time being a go-to white Aryan supremacist at certain times in my, and the people of color are like, "You're the best white Aryan supremacist that I've ever seen," and they take great delight in it. I think some of that is anti-authoritarianism, and they really love that. Most people realize that it's. Cinema villainy is not the same thing as real villainy. And the other thing is, what's really astounding is when you see these young kids see these movies, and then you'll meet them, and you're virtually, literally part of their nightmare fantasy. They probably shouldn't have been allowed to see the movies at such a young age. But, you know, when I was growing up, it was Frankenstein and the Mummy, and these guys, they have a little bit of difficulty knowing where reality ends and fantasy begins. And so that's pretty remarkable to be part of somebody's dream nightmare scenario. It's been very rich acting turf, and I really have enjoyed it. You know, they can't cut you out if you're the bad guy. And if they do, the movie is going to suffer for it. Woe be to the movie that doesn't give the villains their due.
So let's talk more about your book. Now, how many actors have actually gone into authorship? Not too many, I don't think. And, you know, how long did it take you to write it? Is this your very first book? Are there going to be more to follow?
Well, I've written many scripts. I started out at every magazine in New York writing ad campaigns and journalism and that kind of thing in New York. And that was wonderful to get out of university and to have a literate career. And then by accident or destiny, I ended up taking a sabbatical from Time Inc. to write a novel. But instead, I saved money. I split a house with an actor becoming a huge Broadway force, John Tillinger. So I became his assistant director and then directed off Broadway. And I wrote a play instead of a novel. And so writing has always been a part. Then when I got to Hollywood, I could see that there was a lot of turf to be milled in screenwriting. Mm-hmm. So I did a lot of screenwriting, and I founded my own film company, and we did a lot of – most of that was historical and not autobiographical. But I realized that I had a tremendous repository of stories, and I found that when I gathered with other people to tell stories, that often I had a story to top theirs, and that didn't make me feel great. I didn't want to diminish other people's telling a story, so I knew I had to find a place for it. So we ended up with about a 600-page manuscript, and gratefully the first agent and a very highly placed one jumped all over at Intellectual Property Group, And I made the decision to divide it into two books. Volume one came out at the National Press Club on October 3rd in the Kennedy Center for Performing Arts. And then we did a giant reading at Barnes & Noble's in Manhattan, at the largest Barnes & Noble's there. And we've been going around at different books, things, and, of course, working with the PR people. The second book, first book is my upbringing and the writing and a lot of Hollywood stuff. The second book is all Hollywood. So that'll be out around February 14th, Valentine's Day.
Mm. Wow. So, it took him. I was going
to
say.
It took me about 4 years to do that. But, you know, I spent a lot of time in the New York publishing world. And that was interesting and good, although somewhat restraining. And I wrestled with that for a while. The book became, you know, things that happened, like they'd say, I had politics in, because, you know, we live in a very specific world of politics here in L.A. And then they said, well, take that out. And then Trump got elected, so they said, put it back in. So there are a couple of pretty big books. So, but I think ripping along, one thing you learn from working with magazines or newspapers is, you learn how to rip along your writing.
Let me jump in before, just to give you a point, because, again, I love Dave, and this is the fun thing that we can do. And the more and more he co-hosts with me, Patrick, he has his own show as well. The more he gets to co-host with me, the more he'll find out I can follow up with any question in the world. So let's talk about, I got a great stopper before we go into promotions of some of your other stuff. I am binge watch and also watch tons of things. So what do you recommend, a film, a movie to watch that's specifically available on Amazon or Netflix that has you in it, that are not new stuff, older stuff, because we're going to promote your new stuff soon. Which one would you recommend?
Well, I always recommend Minority Report with Steven Spielberg, because it's a masterful movie. But if you want to see Death Warrant with Jean-Claude Van Damme, it's a cartoon that's stuck with people forever. Replacement Killers with Tao Yun-Fat, it's another. For me, it's like a volume thing. You know, I did 80 television shows, everything from 24 to, you know, Boomtown to all the CSI and the NCIS shows. So it's very much a repertory thing. You're dropping in and dropping out. I think in one season I did 27 guest star things and 5 studio movies and 4 independent movies. So you're, as a working actor, you're dropping in left, right, and center. I tease Daniel Day-Lewis a little bit in the book, because he was on Charlie Rose, and they were saying, how did you get the voice for There Will Be Blood? And he'd say, well, I'd come up with little snippets for 8 months, and I'd send them to the director every week or so, and then we came up with a voice. Well, I was like, are you kidding me? I mean, if they tell you to be a Serbian mass killer in Hollywood, 20 minutes later, you're a Serbian mass killer. if they tell you to cry, you cry. If you do your own stunts and your own shooting and your own precision driving and dialects. And I just made all of that. A working actor embraces all of that. I run a mentorship program called the Uncommon Dialogue Films Entertainment Warrior Program. And we teach people how to write, direct, produce, and act. And each one of them is a very, very complementary discipline. And you've got to be fast. I mean, auditions are the key to the kingdom. I mean, you've got to be able to memorize lines and put an individual character together.
Wow, it is amazing.
20 minutes or less. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you mentioned 24.
Steven Spielberg would bring in different scenes every day, you know, and so you're a professional can work hard and fast and really skilled. So 24. And, yeah.
And it sounds like you work a lot. I know Glenn Morshower on 24, and he's billed as the most, the actor that works the most in Hollywood, and nobody knows his name. You know, it's like, oh yeah, I know that guy. And who are your readers that you're targeting? I mean, are they just the people who know you and are fans, or are you going for people who don't even know who you are, or they know who you are and they don't recognize the name? Who are you going mm-hmm. for, and what is your goal? What do you want them to learn?
We're going for a lot of audiences. Number one, how did I end up playing villains? What background did I have? I had a very privileged upbringing. My father founded Cigna Corporation, and my mother had some mental illness. And so it was a very volatile but privileged upbringing, very literate. A lot of athletics, a lot of overcoming car accidents and motorcycle accidents here then. Very literate stuff with the magazine. I would say, obviously, most people are drawn to this because it's the insider Hollywood stuff.
Yeah.
But we want people to come away with an in-depth look at how the craft of acting is assembled
mm-hmm.
and how that is put together in a very, very swift manner. We want people to think some about the politics that are ongoing in Hollywood, which I think are often anti-American and completely nuts.
Talk about that.
Oh, yeah, sure. I do very readily. You know, I came here. I talked about when I came here, my father had been a World War II underwater demolition team guy, Silver Star and a Purple Heart at Okinawa, landed on every beach in the Pacific. I came to America as a Sons of the American Revolution, coming from Virginia and Connecticut. And so I was very devoted to the American experiment and patriotism and all of that. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is, when I got here to Hollywood, suddenly you're in a world where not only are they anti-military, but I think essentially anti-American. And it comes out of the Vietnam War protests and all of that. And it's maddening. And it breeds cynicism among young people about our institutions. I talk about Oliver Stone quite a lot, who I revere as a filmmaker. But, you know, if you watch his untold history of the United States of America, it's riddled with things that are just completely nonsense. That said, if there's any anybody out there who cares about America, they should go on Netflix and watch A Good American. It's a documentary on the NSA code breakers and program makers. They've since Vietnam have had the ability to predict negative events from terrorist groups and armies that were opposing, and yet the greed of the American government stifled those creative geniuses because they were able to make billions of dollars not absorbing what they're doing. And that kind of stuff cost American lives from Vietnam right up through 9/11 to right now. So on the one hand, Oliver Stone's done a great job. He executive produces this. He's done a great job. It's a brilliant thing. I think your audience will find it appalling and make them angry about some things that are going on with the government. I believe in giving our intelligence services everything they need to do the job. But these guys were able to protect Americans' rights, at the same time do the job, and yet the government rewarded spectacular failure on the part of the intelligence services.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting thing. There's a lot of information out there. Look, you know, there's a lot of great fiction shows, Narcos, Narcos Mexico. These are all extraordinary documentary / fictional exercises. There's a great world of cinema energy out there, and we kind of owe a debt to Netflix and all these places, because for
truly,
a while
yes.
it looked like it was going to die because of reality TV.
Yeah, I love the and it's great for you because you never know the opportunity next coming up, Patrick. And I'm going to segue us because, again, we could talk to Patrick Kilpatrick for hours here on the Neil Haley Show's Caregiver Dave celebrity segment. But let's kind of go right into, Patrick, the point of the matter. Your two movies coming up. I like the both seem very interesting. I bet you're a villain in both. I didn't get to read up or watch, and you got to tell me where I could go watch these, Patrick, because I'm becoming this kind of guy that's is binge watching like crazy, watching movies. But I love watching stuff that I interviewed the celebrity in because I could become a fan and really become a fan of that actor. It's a lot of fun. So go ahead and tell us.
It's like a bad penny. He's everywhere then. Nightwalk is coming out. That's I describe it as a Romeo and Juliet Western journalist meets Islam beauty. We filmed it in Morocco. Sean Stone, Oliver's son, plays the journalist, and I play the quote unquote towering vessel of hate. I was able to improv my way all the way through that one and insult every cultural group on the planet. There's one very interesting project called Catalyst, where I play a pedophile priest.
Wow.
Which was a really interesting experience to do the research on that, because I hope that one is ultimately redemptive for everybody who's involved. There's a number of other good actors involved, and we all play sort of the seven deadly sins. And directed by a wonderful director named Christopher Folkins. And that's coming out. And then Assassin X is on DirecTV, and Blackwater with Jean-Claude and Dolph Lundgren is on DirecTV. I won the People's Choice Award for Assassin X at the Action and Film Festival, which I was very grateful for. So I just played a good guy, border patrol guy, in a movie called The Grand Inquisitor, and they're in pre-production.
Oh my gosh, some of this stuff's not even listed, Patrick. Can you believe how much this guy works, Dave? I mean, he's giving me the binge watch for the rest of the year already of what shows to watch. And now, Dave, we're going to kind of jump in. And I saw Active Shooter, too. That's another one coming up, right, Patrick? That's what I was interested in.
Active Shooter is a very unique project. I went out and we shot about 500 hours of footage, ostensibly about the idea of what does it take if an action actor gets into the mind of an active shooter. And at the same time, we were saying some things about what I call the Hollywood culture of theft. There's a ceaseless attempt by the powers that be out here, which I've been able to escape, but at stealing intellectual property. The Chinese have nothing on the Beverly Hills major studios and production houses, but Active Shooter, I have to edit that. And it'll be brilliant, or we won't release it. A lot of great footage. It went all over the country, used real SWAT teams, real fire departments, a lot of nature imagery. Essentially, that's screenwriting in the editing room.
Yeah, wow.
So, Dave, your question's coming up. He is doing an amazing job. And I bet you, Patrick, again, which I have to go through your films and I'll say, oh, that's him. And that's the kind of thing that a villain, we always hate them, but, you know, it is what it is. But go ahead, Patrick, go. Dave has his final question for you to end the show. Why Dave's here? Dave's an amazing guy as well. And Patrick, what he does is just tremendous work for caregivers, and it's a tremendous message and mission, and he continues to grow and help others. And go ahead and ask the question, Dave.
Well, hey, I'm nothing special. I'm just a normal guy who was running a gas station, and one day my wife complained about a headache she had for 3 days. Well, it turned out that headache turned into a stroke, left her severely speech impaired, paralyzed on the right side. And this is our new normal that we've been living with for 22 years. She still can't talk, but she communicates through Pictionary and charades, two games I hate, by the way, but I'm learning to love. And she still can't walk, but we get around with a power chair. We travel the world now. I speak to caregivers, encouraging them to put their needs first. So, because 30% of caregivers are actually dying. So my mission in life now is to help caregivers stay alive, and to help people who are not caregivers to realize that one day they're either going to become a caregiver or going to need a caregiver. So now is the time to learn how to do it. How old are your parents? Are you in that boat? Are they getting up in age?
My father passed away in 97. He was quite young. He was 72. My mother just passed away last January. She was 90. She almost would not let anybody. My sister caregiver her, but she virtually wouldn't want that. They come from this very independent stock, and she was tough. I mean, I want you to, your readers, your listeners, to know that a portion of each book sales goes to Disabled Veterans of America.
Oh, awesome.
And so, they're a fine organization. 100 years have been doing things for wounded warriors and vets. But we're always doing something with a lot of charities. Celebrity's not worth much unless you actually are doing something good for somebody. And I'll say some prayers about you and your wife that says something tremendous about you.
And she's doing good. I mean, she makes us normal people look like whiners and complainers. She doesn't complain about anything. And anytime I complain about something, she gives me this look like, yeah, try walking 24 hours in my shoes, buddy. So I just encourage people to go to caregiverdave.com and join the team and stay alive, stay healthy.
And Patrick, best
I'll
place
do
we,
that.
Yeah, we, that's great, Patrick. And where's the best place we can connect with you?
Well, the book is hardcover, softcover, and Kindle is on Amazon. It's also on BarnesandNobles.com. If somebody wants an autographed copy, they can go to PatrickKilpatrick.com. I'm readily accessible on Facebook and these places, Twitter, and that. I'm Patrick, Pat Kilpatrick. I'm Pat Kilpatrick is on Twitter. And, it's out there and in select stores. We've got a lot of signings coming up, in particularly in L.A. and January, February, March. But anybody can get a hold of me by the social media sites, and happy to communicate with a lot of people.
Absolutely. And I can't wait to start binge watching your movies. And then I'll have to hit you up on Twitter saying, hey, Patrick, I know who you are now, because I know I was a fan of Jean-Claude Van Damme's movies. So I'll say, oh, my gosh, you're the villain. Mm-hmm. OK, so last question, Patrick, you are still doing movies.
Yes,
I'm 6'10". I could get some work, couldn't I, at one point in time, even maybe when my kids get older, I can get some work, wouldn't I, with my size? Former pro wrestler, too, by the way.
I mean, an old guy, right?
Yeah.
Yes, you could. I want to tell you that the truth is it comes down to craft. Now, that's not to say that you might not step into some interesting jobs just because a director takes a fancy to you. But if you're going to get a sense of craft, it takes about a year or so of really driving. Most of it is learning how to audition and act. If anybody who wants to pursue any of that, they can contact me, and we have a program that saves people a lot of money and keeps them from walking in the wilderness.
That's great.
Which is the whole town is set up to take money away from actors. So if you're interested in that, I have a curriculum called Deliver the Goods, and I've taught it at the New York Film Academy as a master's class, and we've done work for Brazil and Nigeria and the State Department. And so we've got strategic materials that can help you out.
Absolutely.
So you're quite the entrepreneur, aren't you?
Yeah, he is.
Well, there's some great books. I call it Curse of a Liberal Arts Education. But there's some great, great books, which I can text you, which will get you going, too.
All right, well, I got to wait some years, or who knows, Patrick, I could be contacting you. I interviewed somebody that was in the movie with The Rock as playing the ape, and he said, guys with this size, there's opportunities big time, but I guess I can't be leaving now. But at one point, I'm going to try. But good talking to you, Patrick, and former pro wrestler myself. So it was good talking to you, and best of luck with the books. And when I watch your movies, I'm going to tweet you out. Let's hope you don't ignore my tweet.
Thank
okay.
You.
All right.
Thank
sound
you
good.
Very much.
Sounds good, guys.
Happy. Get us the show, and we'll blast it out as well. Happy holidays, guys. Merry
you
Christmas.
You too.
All right. Merry
Whatever
Christmas. Happy. Absolutely. Well,
Christmas.
Thanks for calling, Patrick. Take care. Okay, thanks. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Neil Haley's show. We'll be back in just a moment.